So welcome everybody to our sixth and final session of our Careers in Utilities Day. So session six, we're looking at AI and machine learning and the roles that are available for people working in a startup. So thanks for joining us for this session. My name's Hayley Monks. I'm the co-founder of Women's Utility Network and also Managing Director of Utilities at Go Beyond Partners. And I'm your host here for the session this afternoon. A little bit about One for any of you who are not aware of the Women's Utility Network, who we are and what we do. The network was formed nearly 4 years ago and was aimed at developing and encouraging women within the utility sector. So I was one of the founding members along with my fellow founders pictured here, Joe Butlin, Rebecca Sedler, Angela Pert and Angie Needle. And we really started to give women the skills and confidence they needed to build lasting and fulfilling careers in the utility sector. We are massively underrepresented in the sector. And what we wanted to do was to create a network where women could come and help and support one another to recruit, retain and develop women in the sector. So today's event is part of one of the things that Women's Utility Network do in terms of highlighting really the very broad range of careers that are available in the sector and giving people maybe that little idea, get them curious about different opportunities so that we can, as I said, keep women particularly in the sector. So our speakers this afternoon, we have Shelley Copsey and Alex. Do you know, Alex, I didn't even ask you how to pronounce your surname. And I do know I'm not even sure I'm going to try.
No worries. It's not an easy one. It's Nijuko.
Nijuko. Oh, actually, that isn't that difficult, is it? Nijuko. So thank you for that. So Shelley is CEO of Field, which is a rapidly growing technology startup. Her career began in consultancy, KPMG and PwC. And she's led the commercialization of data technologies for Australia's National Science Agency. I've had the pleasure of interviewing Shelley for a One podcast, so you can actually go and find out more about Shelley's very interesting career and some amazing advice she gives to women in business as well. That's available on the One website. Alex is a senior software engineer at Field, and he has had a variety of roles leading technology companies and has a particular skill for deeply understanding how business problems should influence software design to ensure real problems are solved. So we're delighted to have them both with us today. They're going to discuss how leading Field workforce technology company Field approaches building its business. So from customer research and insight through to validation, business analytics, and ultimately product design and build at each point, highlight the types of career opportunities that exist for forward-thinking, ambitious people. So I'll also touch on how working in a fast-growing startup can be career-defining, with employees often experiencing an acceleration of their growth through the multitude of opportunities they're exposed to and a culture of action. So it sounds absolutely fantastic and can't wait to hear more about it. So on that note, I'm going to hand over to Shelley and Alex.
Thank you very much, Hayley.
Thanks, Hayley.
Get my screen shared.
So thank you for taking the time to come and join us this afternoon. As Hayley mentioned, Alex and I both work at Field. We're a startup, but we come out of the utilities sector, out of SGN, and we were going to spend some time this afternoon talking through what goes on at a startup daily. We're an artificial intelligence-based startup and you know, some of the roles and responsibilities that people in the team have, so you can kind of see the breadth of opportunity that might exist in a startup that's not always obvious from the outside. Jump on, Alex. So what we'll focus on particularly is like how as a startup we go about building a successful product. You know, for a startup like us, when you form, you've got a short cash runway. And so you've got to get really focused on building a product and being successful in market. And I'm going to hand back to Alex to kind of tell some of the story.
Sure. So what differentiates a startup from normal size company that's already quite established? What are the specific consideration and constraints that are imposed on a startup that affect how it operates? So I think the main thing to think about an early stage startup is that it usually starts with a very small team. So I think we started with 5-6 people. I was employee number 8 or 9. And we were quite small for a while there in our first year. And now we're growing to a slightly bigger team, but it's still 20-30 people. So because it's such a small team usually at the beginning of the journey, what happens is that people come in with various areas of expertise to fulfill particular roles. But what often happens is that they have to wear many hats and fill up various parts of the thinking process. A startup also usually is organized around building a product. So in our case, it's a software as a service product that we provide to utility companies. But at the beginning of the journey, this is what we like to call an MVP, so a minimum viable product. And that means that the product fulfills the basic requirements that were identified to provide a service to the startup's customers. But because it's a very early stage product, it will have many limitations, it will have problems. And so a startup's job is to quickly kind of figure out what those limitations are and iterate on that minimum product so that it can fulfill additional niches and become more and more useful to its customers. Since a startup operates at the early stage, this was definitely the case with us, but it's the case with any startup I've worked in before. You have a minimum viable product that fulfills a certain need for a customer. And then usually those customers and business stakeholders and investors, everybody will have 1,000 ideas of directions that a product can go in. People have suggestions, they'll come to a startup with many, many ideas. And because of such a big space of opportunity that a startup has to contend with, that can also slow a startup down if these opportunities are not quickly prioritized and implemented in the right order. Because if you go in too many directions, you end up delivering nothing. So that's a particular challenge that a startup comes across. Usually in a startup, you have limited initial exposure to customers. So many startups actually start with no customers whatsoever, and they have to figure out a solution for a problem that's out in the market, but then they have to go out and actually convince a customer to sign on board and actually start using the product so that the startup can have that feedback and evolve the product into a more useful direction. So that's a big limitation. A lot of startups end up getting no customers and then they cease to exist. And a startup is usually pre-revenue when it first begins. So it operates on the basis of a promise that the product will quickly adapt and prove itself in the market. And then the startup will start making money. But since the startup is pre-revenue, they have to really have a good story about how that's going to happen. Otherwise, they'll get no money to actually be able to operate. And many startups sometimes start in garages and people pour their own life savings. They take out mortgages and things like that to fund their startups. Alluding to something that I already said in all those other points, a startup has to ruthlessly validate, iterate, and prioritize and grow very quickly in order to thrive and stay afloat. Especially because a startup is pre-revenue, it will be spending money that it doesn't have in terms of income. And so it has to quickly grow that base of customers, adapt to those customers, and grow in the market in order to be able to break even and then break into profitability. So this is there's 1,000 different iterations, 1,000 different images like this out in the startup land, but this is like a typical startup curve. You have an idea and there's some initial enthusiasm. You go to the market with the idea, oh, I can solve the problem for you, customer A, B, and C. But then you have the reality check. Oh, actually, it's way more complicated than you thought, or it's not so easy to get the customers on board, get them to change their business processes to use your product. Often you suffer from a lack of traction for a while, and that's where you keep iterating your concept so that you can fit in somewhere, fit into someone's business process, sign them on as customers. Slowly, you start getting some traction. You start pulling in some extra funding based on that traction. You can have projections that you're actually going to break even in a few years. If you're lucky, you're going to get to the stage where you start to growth and scale, and you get on the path to sustainability where you've created from scratch a small, now becoming medium business that has legs. So I think the statistic that is bound around is that I think over 90% of startups fail when you look at general startups, and it can happen at any of those stages. So you can have an idea and then you can fail the reality check, or you can fail as you're already growing and scaling because your expenses are too high and it's not matching up. So there's many pitfalls along the way, but it makes for a very exciting journey.
So overlaying on to what Alex just said, and what is Build's story and what are the different types of venturing? So if I just backtrack a second, I think you can probably hear in Alex's story that anybody that comes into a startup in early stage, they might come in to do a defined role, but they'll often end up doing many different things because there's never enough people to fill all of the skills that you'd think would be needed in a company to make it tick. Field sits though on the corporate side of venturing, and that's a little bit different to what you frequently hear about in the market when you hear about the startup journey. I think, you know, what we all see almost hyped in the media, and if you watch, you know, a bit of Netflix, is that garage startup. Field is instead what is a really emerging trend in innovation, which is corporate venturing. So this is like when big companies begin to think about what are their needs in the future, where might they be getting disrupted from? And, you know, instead of sitting there thinking this is a problem, they instead think about how do they capitalize on the opportunity and grow something new of value. So, you know, in the example of Field, SGN, the gas network that, you know, delivers gas to about 6 million customers in the UK, they were looking at their future workforce needs and how they were going to manage their field force really different into the future. I mean, there's obviously the pressures being felt in the industry of the need to transition to a low carbon environment. Data and digital are everywhere, and they need to attract a new generation of workers who potentially don't want the same experience as the retiring generation. And then we've also got regulatory pressures around how do we do more with less and how do we deliver a more efficient service to our customers when our customers are kind of living in the Amazon era of wanting everything now and today. So Field was really lucky that SGN saw some problems and didn't see a great solution in the market, and got together with another couple of really, really big corporates to form Field and put some money in up front. So we didn't have to go through that phase of, you know, everybody sinking their life savings in. We got a bit of money to get going with. The other really lucky thing that you find in corporate venturing and that we've benefited from is it gives you an experimentation partner. So someone that's actually got skin in the game and will give you honest feedback. Versus, you know, what I've experienced when I haven't been on the corporate venture side of the fence, when everybody nods and smiles and says that's great, but because they don't have skin in the game, it's not always, you know, their need or in their best interest to tell you the truth about the product. And so that's really helped us get product market fit more quickly. We're about 18 months in and we've kind of gone through that journey of really understanding if our product works. I think that, you know, when you're looking out career-wise, making that distinction between a corporate venture and another type of venture and how that maybe ties into your risk profile and what you're kind of tolerant of is quite important. You know, the next big consideration for us and a good consideration if you're looking at startups is whether it's a business-to-business model or a business-to-consumer model and what your background is and what you're familiar with. You know, like a business-to-consumer model can be a bit quicker to get scale, right? You might be able to get lots of people using your product for free, but it might be really, really difficult to turn that into a paying model. You know, lots of people that work in our sector are used to working in a business-to-business model. And, you know, that's a really important distinction because you probably will just find intuitively, you know, how a business-to-business model works, even if you're not so familiar with the startup landscape. You know, much higher focus, therefore, on things like enterprise deals. But potentially the tougher piece here in this kind of world is the customer engagement. And if you think about those end users out in the field who are not paying, you know, the bill to use the product, how do you make sure that they really love the product and they keep using it so that people keep on paying your fees? Last bit's what I touched on up front is the funding. We were very lucky to be well funded from the beginning, you know, which gives the entire team a level of security. People know that they're going to get paid at the end of the month. When I think about the current market and how hot it is to get the employee that you want, I think it's a really big advantage if you're sitting in a company that's got really good funding. Back to you, Alex.
Sure. So wanted to have an overview of what is the kind of talent that we need to iterate and grow a startup company like Field. So these are the different kinds of roles that exist in the company. There are a few different touch points. So when I was talking about the minimum viable product that we start with, it's a basic product. And how do we go about putting effort into this basic product to iterate it, to get it to a stage where it's more and more useful for the customers that we have, for future potential customers, so that we can solve more problems for them, so that we can make more money and stay afloat, basically, as a startup. So in order for the team to iterate on a product, so the little loop in the middle is, the team has to have certain touch points with reality. That's how I like to think about it. So there are various touch points with reality that we must be plugged into. One, there's the customer organization. So we're talking about a B2B startup like us, for example. So customer organizations is, for example, with our main customer SGN, these are the stakeholders in the business. These are the workers on various echelons of the hierarchy of the organization. We need to basically talk to people across the organization, understand their goals, the pressures on their organizations, the business processes that they work with day to day. And we need to understand their world in order to figure out how we can help them, how we can fit our product into their daily lives and the lives of their organizations. Then they are the end users. They are also part of the customer organizations. So in our case, these are mainly field workers and the managers of field workers. Those are main two user groups, although we have others. So these are people that use our app day to day, our daily users, and they will have their own experience of this. They have the priorities of their job. They want to stay safe. They want to get home to their families on time. They want to be efficient in their jobs, and they want to be appreciated for what they do. So their interactions daily with our product, they will have a lot of opinions on how the product is performing. For example, if they use one of our mobile apps out in the field, does it work when they don't have internet connections? That's an example of an interaction that they might have trouble with. So our users, our end users, are a treasure trove. They spend hours interacting with our product. And so they have opinions that we must listen to. They're the ones to tell us if something goes wrong as well, to which we need to react fast in order to unblock them and keep them safe. And then there's also data that we collect, analytics. This is data pertaining to how the product is actually being used out in the real world. So when users interact with the product, the product generates data saying this was clicked, that was clicked, this was done in this order and that order. So from this kind of analytic data, what we can do is we can see how the user journeys through the product and where the friction points are, for example. So if we can address friction points, they get stuck in one screen, for example. If we can address friction points, then hopefully we can bring the engagement of the user and make it less frustrating for them to use it day to day, and make a better product out of it. So these are our touch points with reality. And the various roles that exist within the startup all have to stay connected to the touch points and also think about our company goals and the goals of our customers. So just to take you through the various roles that exist in the company, obviously when it comes to interacting with existing and potential new customers, we have roles in sales and account management, and these will be roles in a startup. This often, you know, at the beginning, this started with Shelley, but now we have additional additional roles within interacting with customer organizations. So these will be roles that people that specialize in sales and account management, but also people from the industry that can relate to the problems that a customer organization might have. So that's very important that people that interact with customer organizations have a background in understanding how these customer organizations work and what their priorities are. This also applies to our field support and in-house industry experts. This is a category of role within our company that we've slowly evolved as a necessity. These are coworkers that go out and actually speak to users out in the field, so end users, but also will go to customer locations and organize things like workshops, et cetera, but also interact with the hierarchy of the company in order to understand their problems. So these are people that we've hired from the industry oftentimes, and we found that it was absolutely priceless to have their expertise on board. On the end user side, we also have customer support roles. So customer support roles are coworkers that spend time talking to end users. So for example, if a field worker is out in the field and they have a problem with the app, how do they talk to us to get over this problem? Or if they want some instructions or help, we have actually a chat function within the app. So they can talk directly to our customer support, and our customer support becomes better and better understanding, you know, what are the problems currently in the product? What are the frustrations of the users? And they can also then liaise with our engineering team, our product team, to address those concerns, address these pain points or bugs, and then go back to the user and let them know that the problems have been solved. The customer support team is also in charge of collecting feedback from the users. So we send out surveys and things like that. We have a customer satisfaction score. So we always like to keep a finger on the pulse of how the users are doing and how are they liking or disliking aspects of our app. When it comes to the analytics that I was talking to before, we have business analyst roles. These are people that can actually crunch the numbers. So they look at all this data collected from user interactions, and they can say, "Ooh, I can see that a user is spending on average 5 minutes doing this really key business process within our product. Can we do something about reducing that? Because that is the longest journey that they have in our app." And correlating this with what we've heard users say, this might mean that this is a source of frustration. So a business analyst identifies how the product is doing from that data and figures out opportunities to improve the product. Now, these insights are coming to us now from the users, from the field support, from the industry experts, from the customer support, from the business analysis. And that's when they make their way to the product team. At the core of the product team, there are product manager roles. So this is a person that is in charge of kind of taking in all of this feedback, taking in all of this insight from all these different sides, understanding the business cases, understanding how the product functions. And then when I said that a startup has 1,000 directions that it could possibly go in, the product manager's role is to kind of organize all of these 1,000 directions and gather evidence that supports going in one direction versus the other, and then prioritizing what is the next thing that we work on in this next 2 weeks, for example. What is the next important thing that we focus around building that will bring the maximum value for the minimum cost? So the low-hanging fruit, what's the next thing that we do? And sometimes a product manager also has to think about strategic decisions. So for example, if sales is speaking to a few potential customers that are coming up, they're potentially going to sign up, they're going to trial our product, for example, a product manager has to think, okay, how do we fit our product to these new potential customers without ruining it for the existing customers? And in fact, can we even make it better for the existing customers while also fitting it to additional customers? So that's another point of contention the product manager has to think about. Of course, there are wider roles in a company. So HR, accounting, compliance, data security, a startup has to be on top of all those additional things, organizational things, so that we keep our data safe, so that we comply with industry standards, so that people get paid on time, and so that we can hire, so that we can care about how our staff is working, et cetera, et cetera. At the beginning of a startup, again, going back to the beginning story where we have 5-6 people working in a startup, that role tends to fall in between the cracks, falls on various people's laps. I'm sure Shelley actually has taken a lot of those roles at the beginning, but as a startup grows, that becomes obviously more untenable, and those become roles that start to be necessary in a company. And then that remains, that leaves my department, engineering department, and the adjacent data science department. So the job of the engineering department, especially in a small startup, is to give the kind of technical insight into this whole iteration and prioritization process. So a good engineer should understand the customer, should understand the business implications for the customer, should understand the psychology of users, should have good insight on what does our data tell us about our product, and then relate all of that to what the art of the possible. So the engineer's job is to actually implement these changes in the product. So the engineer has to take all of these prioritizations into account as well, and then also feedback what is the feasibility, what implication does adding an additional feature have for the product, for its complexity, for its maintainability, for the cost of developing this product. And in the data science department, we have specialists that whose job is to identify, given all the data that we handle for our customers, the business processes that we are part of for the customer with our product, where are the opportunities where we can help them think? So I like to think of AI, machine learning, data science, those are all big words, but I like to think of it in terms of helping the user think. So what kind of leaps in judgment can we help the user make, or at least support their judgment? So data science is applied to those problems where, let's say, a human is thinking of making a decision and they have way too much data to analyze. Well, that's the perfect problem for data scientists to step in and say, we can pre-analyze that data and surface the highest priority items, for example, and help the human make a decision. So all those gaps where we can help a user infer something, those are gaps that can be filled with AI and bring value to the customer, because it helps the decision-making, it speeds it up, and it frees them up to do the things that humans are really good to at doing. So that's a general overview of how different types of roles. And I've touched on some of these points already, but I wanted to kind of bring this back to the role of the individual. How do we find a path from where we are now to what we're aiming at? So as a startup employee and member of a tiny team, we all have to keep the big picture in mind. And I think I've alluded to this already. We all have to, with our unique perspectives, whether we're an industry expert that is talking to the company, to the customer organization hierarchy, or whether we're an engineer, or whether we're a customer support specialist, all of us have to keep the big picture in mind and continue to align ourselves to what, as a company, we're trying to achieve. And we all have a unique perspective on what the biggest opportunities are in the next iteration of our product. And as such, we all need to come together and prioritize together so we can find the right path to our goals. So what are the different kind of questions that we ask ourselves when prioritizing the next thing to be done So there is a cost to building and maintaining a solution. So every time we make an iteration to a product, that costs money to produce that iteration, but also it could add complexity to the product, which will give a long-term cost to maintaining the product. When we adapt the product to an additional customer, again, how do we do it in such a way in which the core product remains stable and well-liked while also providing for these additional cases? So limiting complexity. What are the main user frictions, and how is the current user satisfaction with our product? So where are the pain points? What kind of bugs are happening out in the real world? Where do the users get frustrated? If we can address the points of pain for the user continually, always focusing on where they're struggling the most, then we can create a product that just clicks with their daily work more and more and more. And improve their satisfaction. If the users are happy, then the customers are happy. Customization versus generalizations. Do we create 100 tiny different versions of the same product to fit every customer perfectly? Or do we go back to the drawing board and actually look at the big picture and say, well, how could all of these customers be doing this business process in a way that fits them all and actually improves how they're all doing it within our product? So, and also keeps our product simple. Expand versus iterate and deprecate. If we're trying to solve an additional problem for a customer, do we always just throw that additional solution into the product, making it more complicated? Or actually, can we actually look at something that we're already doing and change that a little bit to fulfill that new business case? And do we also go back to business cases that we tried to fulfill, but actually that didn't find traction? So that this is deprecation. We also, as a startup, you're floating hundreds of new potential ideas, and sometimes you have to let some of them go, because if you keep going down the rabbit hole with all of them, you'll just be stuck in inertia. So as an individual in all these different roles that I was discussing earlier, every single one of these roles has a unique perspective, unique view of the lay of the land, has unique touch points with reality. And they all have to ask themselves these questions with their unique perspective. And as a collective, we can then come with the right path to success. Shelley, did you want to say anything more on that?
Sorry, I'm muted. I think the only way I'd summarize it is that when I look across our team and other startups I've been involved with for the first 20, 30 people, the guy with the spanner in the hand just there who makes me think of a problem solver, we end up being a company that's really, really outweighed on creative problem solvers, and it's a really key skill to bring confidence to as you join a startup. But I think we can probably wrap it there, Alex, and go to any questions.
Cool.
So can I ask if any of our participants today, if they've got a question, if they'd like to unmute and ask that question, or if you don't want to unmute, you can put it in the chat, but it'd be nice if you can unmute.
Thank you both so much. It was wonderful to hear from you and get some really great insight. I suppose my question is, and I think you kind of briefly started to cover it there, Shelley, is in terms of, you know, the type of people that work really well in your business beyond kind of like actual hard skills, what do you think is a really successful person within your business environment?
The first thing I like to talk to the team about is someone that can throw away their to-do list every morning. You know, like what we do any given day can have impact for the business. So people that are flexible, agile, can think about adding value, and that can then reframe their day to figure out how they make the most progress for us is a good one. And the second one is creative problem solvers, and people that can kind of work collaboratively with that problem solving. We kind of, you know, bring in people from industry who have got no product expertise by background, but just really understand industry. You know, we put them with an engineer like Alex who knows what we can build. We couple them with, you know, someone that's maybe an analytics specialist. And it's that power of everybody thinking creatively differently, but kind of within a constraints model, is where I think like you get some really great people that achieve really big steps forward in their career in short periods of time.
That, yeah, that's a fantastic way to think about it. And yeah, really great insight. I think that throwing away the to-do list is, yeah, absolutely a really good one. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. It's quite an empowering way to start each day, not having to carry forward a to-do list.
Isn't it just, I'm sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so I've got a question actually around, I suppose around it being a career. And I suppose what I want to quote is that book, like, what got you here won't get you there. And is that the kind of people that join are the kind of people that just join a startup and they've got those skills? Will those skills be relevant when you're more than a startup, when you're sort of a huge operation? Will they still be the people, or do they have to evolve along the way?
I'll share a bit and then I'll get Alex's perspective. We as a team did a strengths-based assessment the other day, right? And it was really funny, looking across 22 of us at the time, everybody was heavily weighted to ideation, creativity, all of those kinds of skills, and lots of kind of grit and perseverance, because you obviously get knocked back a lot. My kind of view is that you start there, but you end up supplementing it with people that actually maybe are happier for a longer period of time to do the same thing day in, day out, but maybe thrive still in an environment where there is a lot of excitement around and where you're seeing goals being achieved. I think in the main we supplement the types of talents to get maybe a more rounded, you know, holistic organisation is what I've experienced. But Alex, what have you found over time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that personally I've gravitated towards serially towards small companies because I like coming in when there's a lot of chaos and problems to solve and a lot of unknowns. So yeah, I can imagine if we succeed, once we succeed and we become a really big company, I don't know, as long as there's still problems to solve and we're still changing how we work and kind of iterating, then I can imagine being happy for a while. But if it becomes business as usual, I'll probably want to go to another small company and start it all over again.
Well, my experience of large companies, Alex, is that they have more problems to solve.
Maybe less willingness sometimes to solve them.
Yeah, or maybe people have run out of speed of solving problems.
Yeah, from my perspective, it's like, because I'm an engineer, in big companies, if you sit in an engineering team, nobody really exposes you to kind of the bottom line, the business case, the, you know, what's the reasoning. And here I'm kind of plugged into all of it. So I like to have visibility and understand that, oh, we're trying to hit these OKRs, we're trying to get these customers, and I'm exposed to the sales aspect of it, the utilities aspect of it. So yeah, I think I just like small companies personally, but can be different for different people.
Thank you. So any further questions before I wrap up the session?
Quick one, should I get my camera on? It looks like you've got a really exciting sort of business plan and obviously very innovative. One of the concerns with the energy industry at the moment is that kind of the innovative players are being under a lot of challenge and a lot of them are going under for various reasons and we're consolidating back, and that ripple effect is then going on through kind of all the different supportive industries like MOPS and MAPS and that kind of stuff. How much challenge do you find kind of into some of these more traditional businesses and saying, you know, look, this is a new way of looking at things, and how do you overcome that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question on our journey. We spent the first 6 to 9 months really trying as the first sector to crack to be the utilities themselves. And I think when you look at regulatory pressure, but also if they get productivity gains, the full extent of that doesn't flow to them under, you know, regulatory conditions. And we actually found that incredibly difficult. I guess if I kind of go back to what Alex was talking about, that pivoting circle, what we really found quickly, however, was that their supply chains could see immense value because it's a very different, I guess, business model. So I think for us, it's been really key to figure out in that value chain who gets benefit from the product. I think what we're beginning to find, though, now shifting up into utilities and alliance models that are emerging, is that a kind of like blended contractor model where a utility could actually get line of sight across their own staff, embedded contractors, specialist contractors, is probably a different iteration of the product that may be more beneficial. But we've had to be really flexible in what our go-to-market plan was and where people get value to kind of, I guess, progress as much as we have in 18 months.
Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. And thank you so much for such an excellent presentation as well and an explanation. In terms of wrapping up the session today now, I just wanted to highlight that is the last session from today. So thank you both of you for that today. It was great. Our next sort of one event is on the 24th of November. It's a collaboration with Women in Public Affairs. So how women can shape the net zero transition beyond COP26. And it will be a panel discussion. Please do go to the website where you'll find links to get tickets. And also, if you go there, you'll find links for further events and updates on our social media. So the new website's much easier to use. You'll also find our mentoring page. So if you are looking to be a mentor, and I believe everyone's got something to offer, there's your opportunity to sign up there. Or if you're looking to be mentored, you can look at our mentors and see who has availability. You'll also find our blogs and our podcasts. And please do sign up via the website, which you'll automatically get signed up for our newsletter, which will highlight all the events that we do. And it's the way you'll find out about events very quickly, which might be quite interesting next year as we go back to face-to-face events, because our tickets will be limited. So you might want to get in there first. Just highlight the podcast particularly. There's a variety of podcasts on there now. I think we're up to 7. So you can get them via links on the website, or you can search One for All on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music to find them. And finally, a big thank you to our speakers. So to Kerry, to Shelley and Alexander today. That was absolutely excellent. And also to our partners, of which Field are one of those. If it wasn't for our partners, we wouldn't be able to do the things we do for our network. And so they're very much appreciated. So thank you very much for your time today. Thank you, Shelley and Alexander, for your time. And thank you to everybody for coming.